My whole concept around the, you know, racing the finish line is around how do we help every kid build their own blueprint to live a life that's an expanded full of possibilities, being open and curious and having a perspective that there are multiple ways to be successful. So whether you choose whether, you know, how you choose to pursue education and learning past high school, because we're always learning. But what does that look like?
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
I'm Anna Hamoyan, and I am the author of Erasing the Finish Line, the new blueprint for success beyond grades and college admission. And welcome to Sylvia and me.
Anna, thank you so much. And thank you for being with me here today and for giving our listeners so much to actually think about, because when you say going beyond, the new blueprint beyond grades and college admissions, you really do have a new blueprint. And it's funny because it's something that we should be thinking about during life, but things have gotten so screwy, especially the last few years, last couple of years with, you know, the pandemic, that we need to get back to some basics. And as you said, you're an author, you're also an educator, you're an academic advisor, keynote speaker. I want to talk about something that you start off in the book talking about, and it's called faulty finish lines. And when I was reading it, it just reminded me of, I have a grandson. I remember I do have him because he's the love of my life. But, you know, you walk away with all these high points that they're supposed to, these charts and everything that you're supposed to do here and there, and then you see other people doing it. Tell me how that really translates into young children going to school and middle schoolers especially, because I see how that really, to me, puts them on a path to whether they're going to succeed in high school or not, which of course then puts them on a path a little further. So we won't jump ahead too much. But tell me about why you talk about faulty finish lines.
Well, thanks for having me. And you really highlighted the important part of the book, in that we have created all of these faulty finish lines that are really stressing families out and stressing kids out. And so I've been doing this work directly with students for over two decades. And I know more than ever that where a child is at 12 or 14 or 16, they're still growing, they're still developing. And a lot of this hyper focus on college admissions, are you going, where are you going, are you going to this highly selective school, has really dampened the focus that we need to have on these critical life skills, these routines, these habits. And so for this book, I went back and I interviewed my students from 15 years ago with the idea that I have so many students that when they walked in my door at 14, 15, 16, and who they are in their early 30s today, they tell me that so many of the things they learned in my office are things that really carry them and that they use in their jobs today, but also that they were able to build these fundamental pillars that are key to having any student build their own blueprint. And I want all families to really understand, how do we step back from this hyper-focus on college admission that's causing us to lose sight of the skill, underlying skills that kids need to be successful, whether they go to college, whether they go to the workforce, whether they, you know, leave your home at some point and go into a home of their own. You know, wherever kids are going, they are going to need these skills.
And that's the thing. And as you hit on, as we talked about right before we started, not every child should go to college. Not every child wants to, but not every child is a fit. We have, you know, all the technical schools, we have all the various different career paths that people can take. And yet as a society, we're so focused on college. That should be the bar. I mean, I grew up in Long Island. Everyone was supposed to go to college. So of course, I immediately thought my children are going to go to college. You know, it doesn't always happen because not everyone, that's not always their career path, at least not, you know, the big 10, the big, I don't even know how many bigs there are anymore, the Ivy League schools. So tell me, how do we start? Where do we start? You talk about fundamental skills and you talk about executive functioning skills. So where would you like to start? Is one of the executive functioning skills, is that a fundamental skill? I mean, tell me where you would like to start.
So the first pillar, you hit it right on the head, is around systems, and systems based on executive functioning skills. So that's the work that I've now been doing for over 2 decades with students, is teaching these skills. And in the book, I highlight the different ways that parents can do this work. You know, it started with my book that came out 15 years ago called That Crumpled Paper Was Due Last Week, Helping Disorganized Distracted Boys, right? And so I've been talking about how we really need to provide all students with the time, structure, and support to help them learn how to organize, how to plan, how to prioritize, how to start and complete tasks. We overlook that as a skill. Like, getting stuff done is important in life. And then also how to be adaptable when things don't go as planned. And a lot of times we overlook this in the faulty finish line around college admissions, because we say, oh, we need to do everything we can so Johnny gets into college or Susie gets into college. And we don't really think about, okay, but what are their ability to manage their life? Right. So much right now in my office, I'm getting phone calls from parents whose kids have gone to college, right? They've done all the things and they get there and they don't have the general management skills of, you know, getting up in the morning, getting to class, you know, eating breakfast, managing their day to day. So that takes up so much energy because they had no practice, right? Because they were so focused on getting into college. But so how do we help all kids develop these skills? Because what I found when I went back to interview my students who are now in their early 30s is that they could specifically pinpoint, this is how I manage my workflow, whether that's life workflow, whether that's job workflow. And these are the things I learned in your office that I still use today.
Well, just think about it.
More rewarding. Yeah.
And I interrupted you, but you know, it just hit me that all of those skills are skills that we need through life. Think about stay-at-home moms. They do that without, I mean, because they're forced, but if you don't learn that from an early age, you're not going to get through college. You're not going to get through life. You could get through it, but you'll struggle. So these are fundamental executive level skills.
Well, and one of the great things is that how do these skills transform kids' lives? They transform their confidence. They transform their sense of competence. And it actually expands their possibilities. So, for example, one of the stories in the book is a young man who was in my first book, That Crumpled Paper Was Due Last Week, and I revisited him. And he had been diagnosed with ADHD when he was in high school. And when he started working with me, he had a 2.7 GPA. And his college counselor said there were no options really for him college-wise. I didn't agree. But what we worked on were these fundamental skills. I said, we're not focused on the grades. We're focused on these habits. We're focused on these underlying. And so we created this over the next 2 years. Well, his GPA went to a 3.7 GPA. He ended up going to college, but then he also realized his dream was to play the drums. And so he had been practicing. And so he ended up actually transferring to Berklee College of Music, which was his, you know, again, he didn't think it was even a possibility for him until he built these skills. So then now as an adult, though, this idea of building your own blueprint, he realized for himself, he wanted something that for himself was more financially stable. And so in order to do that, he actually has a job that is in the tech industry, and he also does his music. And that is how he's built his own life. And my whole concept around the, you know, racing the finish line is around how do we help every kid build their own blueprint to live a life that's expanded, full of possibilities, being open and curious and having a perspective that there are multiple ways to be successful. So whether you choose how you choose to pursue education and learning past high school, because we're always learning. But what does that look like? And his chapter in the book is called Learning Takes Longer, because one of the things he said to me when I went back to visit him was that he learned that he knew how to learn. It just took him more time, and that was okay.
Yes, and that's it. That was okay. And look, once he accepted that, look how far he came. He's successful. Absolutely. He's successful in learning about himself and the self-confidence. And you talk about that, you know, self-confidence, and especially in today's world with, you know, going through the pandemic, social media, how have you seen that affect the students that you work with, the young people that you work with?
The biggest place that I see the challenge that's come out of the pandemic is with this idea of connection, which is the second pillar. So what I say about connection is families really need to think about how their child feels connected and also have the opportunity for what I call small talk skills, right? Because so many of our face-to-face conversations don't take place face-to-face anymore, right? Our introductions are not face-to-face. Our day-to-day dialogue could be over text or could be over chat. So thinking about the kids don't get that kind of practice to just, you know, walk into a store and start a conversation with another adult. How can we help them? Because that is the fundamental building block of starting new relationships. And I don't just mean like deep, close ties. No. I mean, like the weaker ties, the barista you see every morning, the person who walks their dog on your pathway. How do those little small connections feed into a greater life that feels connected, right? And so the connection is this idea of stronger ties and also multiple overlapping circles of connection that are non-overlapping. So what I mean, multiple non-overlapping circles of connection. Let me say that correctly. And what I mean by that, and this is so key, especially when kids are in middle school and high school, is that you have multiple places you feel connected that are not all intertwined. So if all your friends are at school and then on the soccer team and then also on the robotics team, and those are the only kids you know, if there's a fallout in that group, you know, that happens, you know, friendships transition, you feel overwhelmed. But if you have multiple spaces, it acts as a preventative. And so parents often ask me what they can do. Caregivers often ask, how can I be helpful? And the number one thing to say is that make sure your kid finds multiple spaces they feel connected, but also that they have practice with small talk skills with adults. So, you know, however you can do that in terms of in your community, or if you have a family party that there are adults that they can talk to, these are the daily practice that really tie into building connection. And that's what's been lost, I think, for a lot of families. Like when I mentioned it on my newsletter, I get the most replies that like, I thought I was the only one. I thought my kid was the only one, but that's not the case.
So what advice do you give these parents who come to you? How can they start to reintroduce their children back into, you know, the word I think of is society, but actually that physical connection, that actual standing in front of someone, whether it's 6 feet apart or whether it's, you know, right in front of you, how do you actually get a child who has now spent a year and a half, maybe 2 years for some, in front of a computer, in front of a screen?
Yeah, that's such a good and important point and a good question, because so many parents are at a loss. And every child's different. Every child within a family is different. Every family has different resources and dynamics. But what I do think is to step back and do an audit of what exists in your community, what connections your child does have, what connections you have, what are ways that you can gamify it and make it not feel like a chore to feel connected. So, you know, again, looking at what their interests are, what are the things that you can help them be more in person around, whether that's, you know, having them run errands or running errands together and having them do some of the talking for things, that could be a way to start. Whether or not that means as a teenager getting a job that works with the general public, you know, either in food service, retail, or something where you're constantly on your feet, even just having basic greetings with people, because it gives practice and it lowers what I call the activation energy in the book. Because if you never have conversations with anyone in person, you feel like, oh my gosh, every conversation could be like really, really a big deal. But if you have to meet, you know, 20 people a day, 30 people a day, and just even, hi, how are you? How can I be helpful? All these things, you start with a script. And that's the other thing that parents can help kids do, is with the idea of coming up with multiple scripts for starting a conversation and practicing that. We don't take that, we take it for granted, right? That we know that. But I can tell you, so many kids call my office, you know, on the phone because they need to change something, or, and they don't know how to do a proper greeting or exchange over the phone. We take all of this for granted, that so much happens.
Right. Because especially in today's day and age, everything is done by texting, by phone, by text messages, by email. In fact, email, you know, you're old if you use email. You don't want to use email. You want to use Instagram and everything else. How do you get the children to realize that that's not just their world? You know, because you also talk about, you know, recharging and energy. And how do you get a child who has now all of a sudden almost become an introvert because they're hiding behind a screen? You can't force them. You can sort of give them, you know, as you said, a script. But where do you start? I mean, how do you get somebody out? I'm sorry.
Start and think about what are the options available to you that would be exciting for them or interesting for them, right? And every kid's different. But typically when I start talking to kids, they have something that they're curious about. And that just may mean extra, like maybe there is, you know, maybe there's a topic they're really interested on and there's an exhibit around that topic, or there's an in-person event around that event. And really figuring out what are the ways that you can engage them, meeting them where they're at and giving them a little bit of practice. Also, if they're attending school every day, what are things they can try there as a way to expand, you know, those practice skills? So for the new school year, I always gamify it with students. And this has really worked well, where I say, your goal is to introduce yourself to 3 to 5 new people each week. It could be adults, that could be kids. And it doesn't have to be a long conversation. It has to be more than, hi, my name is, and I go to this school. It has to be more than that. But so like a 2 to 3 minute conversation, and kids, that gives them permission to sort of break that wall and start that conversation. And that's what I found is like the biggest barrier to entry. Kids want to talk to each other. Kids want to have that conversation. But so I did this like once with a middle school, and I did it at the beginning of the year. I came on the first day of school. And then 6 months later, the principal calls me. She goes, Anna, it's totally transformed these kids because they look at it as, you know, reaching a goal rather than, God, I have to do this and this is going to be so hard. So they're talking to them, they're introducing themselves to the principal because that's one of their people, that 3 people for the week. And like, they have now started these mini conversations. And again, the idea is not everyone's going to be your best friend. That's okay. That's not the point. The point is that you feel comfortable talking to people across differences and creating connection across differences, because that's what I found when I went back to my students and saw who were the most successful kids in terms of their job, finding a career they really like that's at a high level, the kids who could connect with others across differences and really forge non-transactional, authentic, genuine conversations. Because, you know, we used to think that you got your job based on connections within your community, right? But tech blew that all open, right? If you think about it, my office is in Silicon Valley. If you want to be successful in tech, you need to be able to converse with the software engineer, the recruiter, the person in the front of the house. That's true for any career at this point. If you want to be, you know, a great electrician that has a great business, you need to be able to talk to the contractors, to the homeowner, to manage and juggle, to have the system in place, right? all of those things. So regardless of what your job is, regardless of whether you go to college, you need to be able to move across differences and have those connections and have that backup system so that when you start a job, you finish it, that you're orderly and you're organized and plan and prioritize. So it makes a lot of sense for people when they start to think about it that way.
Well, it goes back to your, you know, executive functioning skills, which really encompasses just about everything. You know, one of the things is you talked about being adaptable. I mean, look, you know, what took place. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be big things. It could just be, you know, the small things. And it all kind of connects with what you were just saying before, as far as, you know, a social network, having different, not having everything all in one basket per se, because if there's a break someplace, it, all of a sudden you have nothing.
Yeah. And so I think about this a lot. So when the pandemic happened, I wrote a couple of articles for the Washington Post and the New York Times, because I really wanted to interview kids around the country and see what was happening real time. You know, I was working with kids in my office. And I tell this story in the book where the kid that worried me the most was a child that I interviewed who his whole life was playing this one sport, lacrosse, right? And that was it. That was his social network. That was his athletic. He wanted to play in college. It was unlikely, but it was his junior year. And so then the season gets canceled and he is just forlorn. And I was really worried about him because I said, well, what are you going to do now? Now, other kids I interviewed, they would be like, oh, you know what? It's really a bummer, but I've been spending more time cooking or on hobbies, or I'm getting more sleep, or I'm doing, they were able to adapt. Right. And I'm not saying that this pandemic wasn't hard on everyone and we don't have residual effects, but that kid at the very beginning, the first week, I remember interviewing him. I'm like, I am worried about this kid. Cause this idea of even minor, they were so rigid. And again, the third pillar around expanding perspective is around encouraging openness and curiosity that, hey, you know what? Sometimes we have to be adaptable. Sometimes it's a bummer that things that we thought were going to be available are not, but also how do we expand this definition of successes? So anyways, 2 years later, I run into his mom and I ask her, I said, well, how has your son done? He really struggled because it was a grief of, right, the lacrosse season was over and that he wasn't going to be able to play in college. It wasn't, his plans didn't turn out the way he had hoped. And that's okay. That's okay to be bummed about that. But one of the things I talk about in the book is this idea of buoyancy. You know, we talk a lot about resilience and grit, which are very important concepts. I bring up this new concept around buoyancy, which I term as the ability for you to bounce back from a disappointment with less time and energy. So if you have grit and resilience, but it takes you months to get back the fact that you didn't get to play a sport, or that you weren't the lead in the play, or that a person you want to be in a relationship doesn't want to be in a relationship with you, every single thing takes you so much time and energy. It's really going to prevent you from having this expanded perspective. So how we can support kids, often parents will ask me, how can we support kids? It's how do we expand their perspective so there's not one thing that is the marker of success, right? And there's not one pathway. And that there's multiple places that every kid can thrive and multiple spaces. And that is really the message of this work. And the book is really filled with practical strategies. So it's like what you can do in your home or your school today.
And, you know, I love the word buoyancy because it has so much meaning, and the way you defined it and the way you're using it is so important in life. And, you know, it takes work. Every parent wants a happy child. Parents want their kids to succeed. But it doesn't just happen overnight. And it's not, as you focus on, it's not just grades. It's not just a question. The end goal cannot just be getting great grades and what college are they going to go into, or how are they going to follow their, you know, in their father's or mother's footsteps and do whatever. It takes really learning and discovering what your child likes, what they don't like. Talk about resilience and buoyancy. Do they wind up getting bogged down by one thing and then all of a sudden it takes them weeks or months to come back? What are some of the other things that we haven't hit on? I know we talked about energy.
Yeah. So one of the things I talk about too is this idea, this is exactly what you're talking about in terms of how do we support students. And the fourth pillar is around acceptance. And acceptance is really, I think, the toughest sometimes for parents of like understanding and accepting who your child is. And last night I was at, I was giving a presentation to a school of great parents that were mostly parents of kindergartners through eighth graders. And one of the moms says, well, look, my son, he's a fifth grader. And he knew he had a dentist appointment and he was supposed to meet me in front of the school. And then his younger brother had to go find him because he was chatting it up. And do I just accept him for that? And I said, no, the acceptance isn't like I have a high school student that doesn't turn into some work and I want to be accepting of that. No, that's not the whole point. The point is that you understand that this child, that is a challenge for them. So how do you help them develop the time, structure, and support so that they can, you know, see that as an opportunity for growth and address it, right? We want kids to build these skills and we want to know where they're at. And also acceptance is around understanding. One of the things I talk about in the book is this understanding your child's energy profile. And what I've found in families in my work is that when you have a parent and a child that have very different energy profiles, and what energy is profiles very quickly is what energizes you, what drains you, and how do you recharge? If you ask those three simple questions, I give some more strategies in the book, but kids are different, adults are different, people are different. So one of the examples I give in the book is my friend who was so extroverted and is so go, 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 go. And she and her son went to New York and her son could not be more of an opposite. And she would be labeled as an orchid in the Orchid and the Dandelion book around children. He is an orchid. And she texts me midway through their first day in New York. And she's like, oh my gosh, my kid is about to have a meltdown. It's been very stressful. And I said to her, I was like, New York is very stimulating. He needs downtime. And meanwhile, she had this great itinerary that was like plugged to the minute from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. So she was like, oh my gosh. And she knows her son. She just had never, it hadn't clicked, right? You need sometimes someone else to say something. So they were staying with his great aunt. And the aunt had a dog. And so literally she said, Anna, the whole trip was a total hit. Because we spent like 4 hours a day inside with the dog, which she would have never done, right? But then she understood, okay, I need to manage and support this child's energy profile. We are going to do things at a different pace because of that. And by the way, most memorable trip ever. So a lot of acceptance is around knowing who your kid is, helping them build skills, right? We're not just saying, oh, let's accept everyone right. And like not have them become, you know, the best that they can be. It's really though, when you're saying, oh, you're not good enough, or, oh, why hasn't this happened for you yet? It's demoralizing and it stresses kids out. But if you say, ah, this is who you are. I see you and I hear you and I am validating who you are. Here are your strengths and here are your opportunities. How can I help you with those opportunities? Right. And that's a much more inviting and winning way to get kids to also have buy-in around wanting to improve and support them, their improvement, whatever that pathway is.
But you're also giving them confidence. You're giving them self-esteem. You're telling them they're okay, that I recognize you're not me. And wow, you're really, you know, you've got some great skills. We could work on some others. And you have some really interesting things that you like, whether it's petting a dog, spending time with a dog, or going out and whatever it is. As parents, we have a, you know, we get into a, just a general, oh, this is how I see my child growing. This is how I see their future. I like this, so they must like that. Or I didn't like this, but I want to give them, I missed out on that. And it's, we don't listen. We don't ask them, what do they want? What do they like? And actually look and discover what your friend discovered. And luckily she had you to talk to, was the fact that her son wasn't working at the same pace that she was. And that Absolutely. Was okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, I think this is so hard for adults because we have not learned these skills ourselves. Absolutely. So many parents have seen this book, read this book, contacted me and said, I read it for my kid, but I saw myself in it. Some of these things, especially around acceptance, are hard. You know, when I present to parents, like this is the part where they kind of get their own stuff comes up, right? Because it's not just that they are comparing themselves, it's their own fears around not measuring up. You know, a lot of times, you know, the research shows that middle school moms are the most stressed out parent group. Well, most people will say, going back to middle school, nobody wants to is like, let's do middle school all over again, right? Nobody says that, very rude. And if they do, that's great. But what I want to think is that some of this is really parents dealing with their own stuff, right? Even around systems and around connection and perspective, that there was a narrow definition of what success looks like. I had a parent come up to me last night and she says, I have my own struggles with organization. How do I help my kid? And really hers were pretty profound. And I said, you outsource because your goal is that you maintain the connection and the support and the relationship with your kid. This is a very finite moment in time. And you want to really maintain that relationship. This is not, you know, it's your own challenge for yourself. Why bring that challenge to your kid as well? Find somebody that can help you and find somebody that can help your kid. And that's not what you need to focus on. And it was really relieving for her that we don't have to be everything to our kids. And if we have a challenge, that's okay. But acceptance for a lot of adults is, it, you know, we haven't grown up in a society that really like preaches that from an early age. We don't. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's, and it's not a failure because again, we've grown up in a society that has expectations, general expectations for everyone. And we have so many different socioeconomic, I mean, we're a diverse country. Not everyone fits into this bucket. And, you know, we're not failures if our child or if we didn't do whatever we were supposed to do according to society. And then all of a sudden, well, maybe it's inherited. My kid doesn't have it either because it must be in the genes and therefore, you know, acceptance or just straight out, oh my God, what do I do? I think this is, it's a book that everyone should read because as you said, so many parents who read it saw themselves and are reaching out to you for help and it's erasing the finish line. There should be no finish line really because life goes on and on and on. The new blueprint for success beyond grades and college admission. There's so much more to life and there's so much in here that everyone really needs to understand. If someone's reading and says, aha, I have all of this, well, guess who's lying to themselves? I don't think so. If you had one thing you wanted to say to the audience, to what would you say? If you want to leave them with one thing.
I would say that we want every child to feel as though they have the ability to create their own pathway to success and that they have the support to do that. And my goal with Erasing the Finish Line is that it becomes this invisible handbook that really supports families and schools and communities.
And one last question. So what do you do to de-stress? What do you do for fun?
Oh, I love to work out and like an exercise, like walk, even just a walk. It to me is just, I need to be in nature. And I just love being I live near the water. So I love that. So those are there is all this research that says being by the water decreases stress. And I'm a big believer and practitioner of that.
Beautiful. Anna, where can people find out more about you?
So you can go to the website, erasingthefinishline.com, and that leads you into my personal website as well. And it's a website for the book and has information there.
Anna, I want to thank you so much for being here today and talking about some really important, subject and many topics in there. So I thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.